The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
John Paul II famously back in the 1990s gave a series of audiences. There were three of them, one on heaven, one on purgatory, and one on hell, where he talked about, look, the real essence of this experience is not that hell is a place underground somewhere. It's a state of definitively separating oneself from the source of goodness and joy, namely God, and what the results of that are. And these images that we find in Scripture are helpful for understanding a bit of what that experience is like, but we shouldn't focus on them unduly and take them as, oh, this is the literal truth. There's going to be literal fire that's somehow burning a non-physical soul.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's from Pints with Aquinas. It's, of course, Jimmy Akin, a very gifted apologist, addressing what is hell. Good afternoon. It's good to be with you today. Today's the anniversary of that famous vision in Fatima, Portugal, when the seers, very young, what, 7, 8, and 10, or saw the horrors, the reality of what awaits us on the other side. And incredible as it might seem, and I think this is the case for a lot of us, a lot of people do not believe in hell. You know, Patrick Madrid, my colleague here, we were at an event one night, party somewhere, I forget what was going on, and he asked me a very challenging question. He says, what do you think, Drew? Where do you think, do you think more souls go to hell or to heaven? And it made me think, because I've got two mindsets here. I mean, one, I think they go to purgatory, to be honest with you. I think a majority of souls go to purgatory, followed probably by hell and then by heaven. And the reason I say that is, gosh, hell's a reality. You take a look at the lives of the saints. I was reading before the broadcast, I just went through what so many of these different saints had to say about hell, and I'll tell you, it's sobering. It is absolutely sobering. It's almost frightful in some respects. But then I hear the message of St. Faustina, that beautiful message of God's mercy, and how the greater the sinner, the greater the right they have to his mercy. Right? It doesn't excuse our sin. We have to be willing to accept God's mercy and amend our ways. But I always tend to look at God as a merciful God. But we can't discount that God is also a God of justice. He gave us free will, and he will honor that. And, you know, I think it's unfortunate. Churches across the nation, really around the world, they don't preach hell. They don't talk about the reality of it. Everybody wants to be PC. It's no longer fashionable to talk about this reality. And it's astounding, because hell is at its very foundation, the core of our beliefs, that if you fail God, if you reject him, you know, if you reject those commandments that he's given us for true freedom and union with him, then you are going to head to a world of infinite suffering. It's been described as the unquenchable fire, right? Christ himself spoke of it. He talked about Gehenna. Those who go there choose it. I know it's hard to believe. We're going to talk to Father Robert Spitzer about this concept of why would anybody choose to go to hell, right? There's a lot of people who don't believe in God. I've got a brother-in-law who doesn't believe in God. He's a good man. He's a really good man. I pray for his conversion all the time. But hell exists. As I said, it's in 17 books of the Bible, and it's serious, serious business. A number of those who have had these near-death experiences say they've glimpsed flames. They've glimpsed fire. They glimpsed horror and torture. St. Faustina describes the different chambers of hell. St. Avila, Teresa of Avila writes about this. I mean, many are the saints. Padre Pio, you know, I love what he had to say. You don't believe in hell? Okay. You will when you get there, right? I mean, you will at your own peril. But with the accounts of those who've had near-death experiences, and maybe a little bit later today in the show, if I have time, I'll share with you the story of an atheist that I knew, a man who was an art professor who lived a life of atheism and rejected God. He died. He had a near-death experience. It was very different than that of St. Faustina or some of the other saints that have had these mystical journeys. It's a harrowing tale. I'll share it with you. And I'll share with you what an oncologist shared with me at dinner just a few months ago at Divine Mercy Sunday about those who pass on to the other side. A lot of the experiences are really positive, that's for sure. There are a few that aren't, and they are sobering. Bottom line is that the accounts are stunningly consistent, that there is rejection of God, there's vileness and hatred, It is a supernatural place. The suffering is nearly impossible to imagine. I don't have the vocabulary to describe what awaits you if you reject God and you choose hell. It's hard to put into the confine, you know, the finite realm of this world. It's just it's we don't have the words. I as I said, I know at least one, maybe two people have had brushes with death. They've had radical conversions, by the way. They're now ministers. I'll share their story coming up. But let me welcome to the program none other than one of the brightest men that I know. And I don't say that lightly. I really do believe that. I am happy to have with me Father Spitzer. He is a man who I'm going to sit back and just enjoy listening to honest with you. He's a Jesuit priest, a brilliant scientist, the co-founder and president of the Majus Center for Reason and Faith, and the MajusCenter.com. You can check him out. Look, these are great resources for you, too. If you know, I often try to say, hey, what should be in your spiritual library? I'll tell you what should be on your computer. The Majus Center for Reason and Faith. Go to MajusCenter.com. Go to the Spitzer Center for Catholic Organization. That's SpitzerCenter.org. You'll find a wealth of content there. It'll change your journey, your faith life, and your walk with the Lord. Father, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Well, it's great to be back with you again, Drew. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Today's the anniversary of that fateful and famous vision in Fatima, Portugal, where the seers saw a reality that a lot of people don't want to believe in, and that's hell. It's an unpleasant topic. I'd love your perspective. Put it into context for us. I was saying, you know, this is the area where souls who reject God go, those who've embraced sin. It's eternal. It's a place of unimaginable suffering. And the big question for me always is, why would a God who is our Father and loves us and is mercy itself create a place like this for eternity? Well, why not a short little jaunt, right? You pay your time and you're done, right? Or you learn your life or you go out of existence. Explain as you see hell. What is hell? Why is it eternal? And why is it so absolutely horrific?
Well, first of all, hell is given pretty good definition by Jesus Christ. It's certainly the Catechism of the Catholic Church does a very similar job. Jesus uses imagery, of course, of wailing and grinding of teeth. Sometimes he uses the imagery of flames, things of that nature. The Church itself does not teach doctrinally that any one of those images, is to be taken literally, because they're illustrative of both, the spiritual pain, the psychological, emotional pain of being separated from God, separated from love, and what that means, you know, everything from emptiness, alienation, loneliness, the wailing and grinding of teeth, being thrown outside into the darkness. That imagery is definitely, part of, you know, not only Jesus's teaching, but also it does correspond to the Catholic Church's view of hell, which in the Catechism is it's self-exile, right? So it's chosen by you, and I know people say, well, I would never choose hell.
Right.
Well, actually, what the evil spirit is doing, who is trying to, you know, as it were, attract people into this domain of terrible pain and loneliness, emptiness, alienation, what he is doing is he is trying to make it look attractive. He's trying to say, if you go down here, hey, you don't have to worry about, you know, being nice to people. You can dominate them 24/7. You can have your way. It's, you know, the strong will prevail. And by the way, you don't have to deal with God. You're not answerable to him. You can just be answerable to yourself and treat people any way you want to. Why not? I mean, it's a wonderful world out there, as it were. So the idea, what Satan is trying to do is say, hey, this is the life you can lead. But what, of course, he's not saying in the same breath is what you do to others will be done to you. Right. So, if you're going to dominate, well, you're going to be dominated. You want to produce pain? You're going to get pain produced back to you. Of course, you can avail yourself of the Lord's mercy. I mean, at the end of the day, but you have to do that at some point before the end of this life. So first and foremost, you know, the church is saying is, yes, you do choose hell. Yes, it is a place of self-exile. You know, the church doesn't necessarily emphasize the place, I should say, but it's certainly a state of this kind of self-exile. But when God is missing from your life, it is horrible. I mean, you are meant to be with God. You are meant to be fulfilled by God. You are meant to be absorbed in His meaning and His substance. And without it, you are just a wisp of nothingness. You know, there's no substance to you. And so in a way, the emptiness, the alienation, the loneliness, the dread, you know, the guilt that you feel is representative of the substance that you are in that place. So, you know, I know I'm speaking more abstractly than, say, having fire out there, but that certainly is what you feel on the inside and the outside. So,
Father,
so
let me do this.
It's a place of great pain.
Let me open the phones for you, too. If you want to join us, my guest today, Father Robert Spitzer, we're talking about the reality of hell. And you are more than welcome to join us. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can get in now. I have Father for a few moments today. And I know this is a topic that's not often talked about, yet Christ referred to it. It's in the scriptures. Saints have glimpsed it. And it is a reality. You know, you mentioned something that struck me. You said there are, you know, if you hate or if you have anger, then you experience those things. St. Faustina, in her vision of hell, saw certain tortures that were set aside for souls based on the type of sin that they committed. And again, I'm with you on this whole, you know, the absence of God in itself is a torture. Type of sins that send us to hell, you know, what are they? And ultimately, what about these visions of the offenses that we commit against God, maybe an eternal suffering for us, as Faustina saw?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is anything which is, you know, grievous matter that's chosen with sufficient reflection and full consent of the will, that can move us definitely in the direction of hell. That's called a mortal sin. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we can get forgiveness for that sin through the sacrament of reconciliation. We certainly can try to reinforce that through, you know, after our confession with Holy Communion and the other sacraments. But first and foremost, you know, certainly very possible for us to go to hell through a variety of different kinds of offenses. But the evil spirit's plan is for us to choose it eternally. You know, it's not going to be significant enough for him to just, you know, to do something whereby, you know, we choose it, but then we could change our mind and throw ourselves onto the mercy of God right away, right? He really wants to seduce us into hell, and so his basic first strategy, of course, is to ignore God and to ignore his commandments altogether. So he prevents you in some sense, or talk you into thinking the church is a waste of time, or the sacraments are just a waste of time, or ideally, if the evil spirit could do it, his primary plan would get you to be someone to undermine God's plan, to undermine belief in God, to undermine belief in the moral teaching of Jesus. He'd ideally like that, because, of course, then you're permanently committed to, you're not permanently committed to him, but you're committed to him on such a high level that the odds of you changing your mind are going to be somewhat remote. So that's his principal plan. But, you know, if he can't get you to do that, I mean, his second best plan is to just get you to, as St. Ignatius of Loyola would say, just go from mortal sin to mortal sin, right? So in other words, you just, you know, live a life of licentiousness. You don't, you know, pay attention to any of the guilt that you might feel. You treat people in a horrible manner, right? You steal, kill, you know, do whatever you want, you know, basically. And you're the strong guy, you're the proud guy, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of the second best plan. But, you know, the third best plan is, you know, he has to do the long-term seduction and to get you deeper and deeper and deeper down the road of perdition so that it gets harder and harder and harder for you to turn around. And then at the end of the day, you know, even though you have, as Jesus said, right up to the last possible second, you have, you know, the capacity to turn back to him and go, oh, what a mistake. I mean, we've all heard of those moments where somebody, you know, is literally falling off the bridge. I think this was in John Vianney, you know, the fellow was jumping off the bridge and went, oh, no. You know, Lord, help me. And, of course, you know, John Vianney said, well, you know, I found out, you know, that this person was actually rescued, even though it was literally the last second, half second, before he hit that water, he had repented. And so, and that could be an imperfect contrition might be sufficient to rescue you from that fate. But the point is, the evil spirit wants to get you to that point where you'd never do it. You don't want to turn back. You're kind of committed to the quote-unquote lifestyle. And a lot of it is the sin of pride. You want to stay on, you know, what you publicly, you know, lived for. You're going to keep on doing it. And so forth. So, I mean, that's basically his plan, is to prevent you, get you so hooked. Yeah. You don't want to turn to the Lord's mercy. You don't want
to
let's
go to the phones, Father. Let's pick up a call or two here, because Joanne's got kind of a follow-up to what you're talking about. She's in Dumont, New Jersey. Okay. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Joanne, you're on the air with Father Spitzer. Good afternoon.
Good evening, Father Spitzer. My question is, if someone lives their life not believing in God, why would being sent to hell make a difference to them? I would be traumatized because I would be away from God, but they don't believe in God anyway. So what makes it hell for them if they don't believe in God in the first place?
Yeah, well, you know, when you take a look, for example, at some of these statistics of religiously affiliated versus non-religiously affiliated people, I mean, it's a fact that non-religiously affiliated people have double, triple, oftentimes, the rates of depression, anxiety, substance abuse, you know, familial tensions, and antisocial aggressivity, suicides, and suicidal ideation. Mm-hmm. So you'd say that person is much more miserable than a person who is religiously affiliated. However, the person who's non-religiously affiliated, despite all of those feelings, right, of utter misery that can lead to, you know, suicides, et cetera, that person still is voluntarily denying God. Now, when you go to hell, imagine this. If you're just, you know, in this life temporarily suspended, you've suspended yourself from belief in God, or, you know, you're denying the existence of God or whatever it is, and you feel this on that level right here on this earth, imagine what it is if there is no possibility that you made your rejection of God definitive. Can you imagine that now the emptiness is permanent and the alienation is permanent, and now you not only know that, you know the source of that alienation, that loneliness, that emptiness, that depression, that anxiety, that tension with other human beings, that suicidal thought all the time, except it's permanent. I mean, it'd just be like you take the misery that you feel from non-religiously affiliation in this world and just cube it. You know, no, actually, you know, increase it by factors and multiples of, you know, exponents of 10 and exponents of 100, 1,000, et cetera. That's what it is like. And so, yes, it would be a horrible thing. It'd be truly wailing and grinding of teeth. I mean, it would be horrible. So anyway, that's the best description I can give you.
Well, Joanne, I'm grateful for your call. I'm sorry, repeat that. We missed part of what you said, Joanne.
You're saying that the soul knows why they are in hell, and essentially the choice that they made put them there, and why they are there, and what they have lost. You're saying that they have that consciousness in hell?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In other words,
okay.
I mean,
it's part of the suffering.
It's not only that the pain that they feel is amplified, but also the awareness of why they are there. And not only that, the awareness that there's no turning around. They made the choice,
right,
as it were, permanently. They made it a part of themselves. And
yes.
I think all of that really makes for what Jesus called wailing and grinding of teeth.
No doubt. Joanne, thank you. Thank you very much. Great call. Great question. Father, I know I only have a few more minutes with you. You and I have spoken often about the soul. We've talked about the reality of near-death experiences, the fact that we are created to live forever. And so often we share these experiences of where angels come to visit, or the Virgin Mary or Jesus, or people visit this beautiful, peaceful place, or, you know, they're met by their departed loved one. I mean, it's such incredible experiences. Have you ever spoken about, heard of anyone who's had near-death experiences that were not positive, maybe where they encountered a darkness or glimpsed, you know, the failure of this life?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the Janus, there's a series of studies, and I can send you these if you want to post them, but about 15% of people who have a near-death experience do have a hellish experience, and that's pretty much across the board.
Wow.
The studies of Grace and the studies of Atkinson, the studies of a few other people, pretty much would put the number there at about 15%. And they could be everything from just darkness and emptiness all the way through, demonic-looking creatures and things of that nature. That'd be about 15%. In Samuel Parnia, who did that big exhaustive, study there at the University of Southampton, he thought if you actually took the darkness, features in the near-death experience, it actually might be a little higher than 15% of people actually have that dark, alienating, empty sense, not necessarily hellish or demonic sort of creatures, but nevertheless that feeling of just being in a completely vapid, alienating, empty, lonely space, as it were. So, that would be the number, 15%, but maybe as high as 20-23%, something like that.
Well, it's a little bit higher than I thought, and I am assuming, just like the near-death experiences that are positive, God permits these just so a soul can be aware of the reality of and the consequence of their life and their actions?
Yeah, I think, you mean in terms of near-death experiences in general?
Yeah, seeing hell, right?
Yeah.
Or even heaven.
Yeah, I think. Absolutely. I think he does permit it. And by the way, the ones who actually do have a hellish experience, a lot of them turn around on a dime. I mean, they make real significant changes in their lives. Some people just, they just seem to treat it as if it's, that happened. That was really strange. I just go on living the way I've lived. But I would say probably a majority of people actually change their lives and make every attempt to do that. So, Anyway, that's the upshot for near-death experiences. But yes, God definitely is allowing this, and I think part of it is to, you know, also not just have a personal experience, but to share that experience with everybody. And I think when you get these good peer-reviewed medical studies of near-death experiences that really show the strong likelihood, you know, that this is going to happen, that you're going to have a life after death, dark or you know, light. Either way, it could go. I think people are going to think a little bit more seriously about this life and what awaits them. By the way, I just might mention that the New York Academy of Sciences just approved a consensus statement based on peer-reviewed literature of near-death experiences, that they, in the consensus statement, that they believe that life is not going to cease at physical death, that consciousness will not cease at physical death, on the basis of the peer-reviewed articles that are now out there in public. So just to let you know, it's gained sort of a new credibility there in the academic community.
Well, I'll have to bring you back so we can talk about those near-death experiences. I'm fascinated by them. Mm-hmm. It's a reality. We'll all make this journey towards our eternal home. And I think the more we know on this side, the better. So, Father, thank you for all that you do, for your incredible writing. I know you wrote a number of books. What's the best book that would help illuminate people on this issue? The Soul's Upward Yearning, or what would
it be? The Soul's Upward Yearning would definitely be that one. But I have a new book that is coming out in about a year. Just submitted the manuscript to Ignatius, called Science at the Doorstep to God.
Wow.
And there's an entire chapter on this book.
Cannot wait. Father, thank you. I appreciate it. Always delightful to have you here. That's Father Robert.
God bless you, Drew.
Spitzer. God bless you, Father. Check him out online. You can check out his website, spitzercenter.org or majacenter.org. When I return, and it'll just be a couple minutes, I'll share with you what one oncologist shared with me about those who died. Well, they didn't actually return. I'll share with you what happened at the moment of death. Don't go away.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Be who God meant you to be, and you'll set the world on fire. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's true. You know, God has a mission for you. He has created you with meaning and for a purpose. And I hope you are living that life that He's intended for you. You know, we live forever. That's the reality of our existence. I mean, this is just step one in that journey. Eternity is a very long time. And there's a beautiful reality that awaits us. I've spoken about heaven many times, what seers have seen, what mystics have written, what church doctors have, you know, left for us. What St. Paul tells us, that no eye has seen, no ear has heard, the beauty that awaits the place for you and for me that God has created, you know, for those of us that love Him. There's also a place for those who reject Him. It's called hell. And it's a place where souls choose to spend eternity separated from God and from His love. It's something that has not been talked about a whole lot recently after Vatican II. We've really, I think, gotten away from this, the preaching and the teaching of hell. Not that we don't still have it. It's not that we don't still teach it. It's just, I think we live in a world today where everyone wants to be so PC. You know, nobody can do wrong. Everything's got to be tolerated and accepted. Hell's not a punishment from God. It's not something that He inflicts on bad people. As Father Spitzer just pointed out, it's an eternal, voluntary choice that you make. You know, if you choose to reject God's forgiving, merciful love, He'll honor that. He doesn't want it. He'll reach out to you multiple times, but He'll honor your free will. It's one of the greatest gifts that He has given to us. Over Divine Mercy Sunday, I was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I actually went to dinner at a restaurant there. Father Rocky and I had hosted a Divine Mercy Sunday celebration. We went out to get something to eat afterwards. I had the great privilege of sitting down with an oncologist afterwards, just by providence. He was across from me, he and his beautiful wife. And we were talking about near-death experiences. And, I said to him, oh, my gosh, you know, what have people seen? I said, so often I hear about, you know, how their departed loved one has come back, or that child that they had that had died meets them, or their angel. You know, it's all these euphoric, incredible experiences. And I shared with him people that I knew that had these experiences. They approached us. He said, oh, that happens all the time. I said, well, have you ever heard of anyone that's had a bad near-death experience? They all tend to be pretty positive. He said, oh, true. Yeah. I've heard a few. And he says, I'll share two experiences with you. He says, I'll never forget. He says, you know, there was an oncology nurse. She was dealing with a man who was dying. He lived a rough life. He was in a motorcycle gang. I'm assuming he lived a very sinful life. Probably was not right with God. He'd been in a coma, right? So he's laying in this bed. He's all tubed up. And he is, you know, probably close to death. He's hanging on. Doctors are trying to save him. So there was a brand new nurse on the floor that night, and she had to go in. She had to change tubes or bandages or whatever it was that he needed. So there were a couple family members that were in the room, and she says, look, could you please step out? I need to do this. So they left the room. The door shuts behind them. She begins to change whatever it was she was changing it on. All of a sudden, this man who'd been in a coma for probably 3 weeks, he sits straight up in bed. His eyes open. They practically bulge out of his eyes. And he looks terror. Terror just washes over his body. Here's this burly, big, tattooed guy cowering in absolute fear. And he screams out at her. He says to her, help! These cloaked men, these cloaked creatures, they're coming to get me. He saw these dark, cloaked, hideous creatures coming to get him. And as he said that, he died. He collapses on the bed, dead. Code blue. People come in. They're trying to revive him. He wasn't saved. So they go out. They tell the family that he passes. And the family's like, oh, he's in a better place. And I'm thinking, oh, the nurse is probably thinking to herself, probably not, right? I mean, he saw what was absolutely terrifying coming to usher him to a dark eternity, to a dark forever. So I think, okay, it's an anomaly, right? So the doctor tells me another story. He tells me about a businessman, another guy that was in bed, if I recall the story correctly. He, too, was approaching death. And, you know, don't know what kind of life he had. This nurse was alone in the room, and the same thing happened to him. As the man approached the final moment, right, he stood up in bed, but this was a little bit different. Instead of just sitting up with his eyes with terror, terror washes over him too. And he scrambled as though somebody was about to eat him. You know, she said, this man was in this bed, flat, weak, you know, unable to move. And suddenly there was this life that ushered into his body. And he scrambled to try to get off the bed. Help, help, they're coming for me, they're coming. And he died. He died. When I heard the story, it made me recall the account of a minister. He wasn't a minister at the time. His name was Howard Storm. He lived in Ohio. He died. This was a couple. This is, I think it was in the 80s, maybe. He died from a perforation of his intestines. When he was a minister... Well, here, let me go back. I'll tell you a story. It's an amazing story. Howard Storm, he was an atheist, an atheistic professor. That's not new, right? He was the chairman of the art department at North Kentucky University, and he described himself as a selfish man, a man who didn't believe, but actually he detested those who believe. And we see that in these institutions, don't we? It's not okay that you just don't agree that somebody believes in Jesus Christ or has a Christian worldview. You're actually detested for it, right? And that's how Storm was. He detested anybody who had this belief in Jesus Christ. So in June of that year, he was leading students on a trip to Paris, right? And they were going to all the museums. They were seeing the art. And all of a sudden, that night, he got very ill. And he was rushed to the hospital, and he needed immediate surgery, right? So they rushed him to the hospital. Problem was, there was no surgeon available, right? And Storm's in this excruciating pain. I mean, he said he was in real agony. For hours, he is lying on this gurney. And I said to my wife, he said to himself, he says, I better say to my wife, goodbye. He said, I just can't hang on any longer. And he knew he was dying. He was approaching his final moments. And his wife was at his bedside. They said their goodbyes. And he closed his eyes, knowing full well that his existence was about to end. He was going to die. He'd rather have that than the pain he was in. And when you die, you know, he thinks it's like an electric switch. It's just the end of you. And he knew that, he was convinced of that. It's funny. My brother-in-law has the same worldview. He thinks that, you know, when you die, it's it. You just black out. That's it. He was waiting for the big zero, the big blackout, the one that, you know, you never wake up from. The pain is over and his existence has now come to the end. He goes unconscious. He doesn't know how long he was out, but he felt really strange. So he opened his eyes, and to his surprise, he was no longer lying on this bed, but he was standing up next to the bed, looking down at the body in the bed. And he tried to communicate to his wife, who was still there, but she was ignoring him. He tried to communicate with another man who was in the room, but he didn't seem to see him either. And then he heard some voices. He heard some people calling him by his name in English. Now, remember, he's in France. He hears his name in English. Howard. Howard. So he goes over to the doorway. And he says, I asked if they'd come to take me to surgery. And they said, hurry up, hurry up. We've been waiting for you. We've been waiting a long time. Hurry up. And he says, I had a really bad feeling about them. I don't know why. He says, but I went with them. And we journeyed down with this group of people beyond the room. It wasn't just him. It was a group of people down what he thought was a hall. And he says, suddenly I became aware that the hall, it had no features. It was just space. And I realized that I was traveling through a very hazy, ill-lit space. And they were moving me along. And we went on for what felt like a very long journey. But there was no time. It was weird. He says, it could have been days. It could have been weeks. I was outside of time. It's hard to describe. And these people, the further we went, they became increasingly rude and abusive and hostile. He says, Drew, I got to tell you, I was becoming increasingly afraid. So now we're in the darkness. And again, this is a long period. He says, I'm not going to go any further. I said, I'm not going. They're like, stop it. We're almost there. We're almost there. And then they started to push and shove. And he began to fight them. And he says, there were many of them. He says, what took place next was unimaginable. There was a wild orgy of frenzied taunting and screaming and hitting. Yeah, and it makes me think of St. Faustina here on this point, because Faustina would bilocate. St. Faustina would go to the bedside of the dying, and she would pray the chaplet of divine mercy. And so often she encountered demons, right? And they would be doing the same thing. They'd be frenzied. They'd be hissing. They were waiting for the soul of that man so they could, that soul that she was praying for, to take him to hell. Storm said as his frenzy took place, the hissing, the hatred intensified. He says, I could feel they had very hard, sharp nails. My impression was that it was their teeth as well. They were almost abnormally long. He says, I tried to defend myself with this huge horde of people, but it was impossible. He says, what they were doing was almost playing with me. Punching, slapping, scratching, taunting. Vulgarity was everywhere. But then it got worse. And this is the part I'll censor. I won't share with you. But what he said was, every new assault brought howls. Howls of cacophony. And then at some point, he says, they began to tear off pieces of his flesh. And to his horror, he realized that he was being taken apart, actually almost eaten alive, you know. And he says, again, this is outside of time. This is a different reality. So their entertainment, they wanted to torture me so it would last as long as possible. I just want to reiterate that what was happening to me was extremely real. This was real. And after they humiliated me to the best of the building, I was lying on this floor in a place where I am now just ripped and broken. I was devastated. I was stripped of my worth. And I heard a voice. A voice said to me, pray to God I thought, that's a stupid idea. I don't believe in God. I heard the voice again. And I heard it a third time. And I was thinking, what was that prayer I said as a kid? He said, I was 38 when this happened. Last time I prayed, I was 15. Why don't you stay with me? When I come back, I'll tell you what happened to Howard Storm. Don't go away.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, AC/DC there for you. How appropriate, huh? It's good to be with you today. If you're just joining me, we're talking about a dark reality, the reality of hell, the consequence of sin, the consequence, really, of the rejection of God. A lot of people do not believe in hell, and they live their lives according to their own commandments, right? There is consequence. I want you to be aware of that. It's something that's not often said, not often told. But there are many who have gone before us who have glimpsed the reality of the other side. And yes, they have seen positive things. They have seen, you know, the blessings of the afterlife. But I'll tell you what, they have also seen the reality of hell. Look, and I'll reiterate this one point. 17 books of the Bible speak of hell. Christ spoke of the unquenchable fire, right? He spoke of Gehenna. Hell exists. It is real. St. Faustina saw it. The Fatima seers on this day in 1917 have seen it. I've known a priest who had a brush. I'm sharing the story, if you're just joining me, of an atheist professor. He was from the University of the Art Department of North Kentucky University. He was the chairman of the Art Department. His name was Howard Storm. And he had a harrowing experience. He was on a field trip to Paris with his kids. He was on a trip and got deathly ill. And while waiting for surgery for hours in agonizing pain, he died. He heard strange voices speaking in his own language, inviting him to go with him. He thought maybe they were taking him to surgery. And on that journey, in what he said was it's hard to describe it. He was in a dark place without boundary. He was tortured, tormented, mocked, ridiculed. And as he was broken and torn apart, humiliated, lying on a floor, realizing he was on his way to hell and this would be his eternal reality, he heard a voice. And the voice said to him, pray to God. But he's an atheist. I don't believe in God. I'm not going, that's a stupid idea, he said to himself. But that voice, that interior voice, maybe that exterior voice, said it a second and a third time. And he was thinking, I don't know how to pray. Last time I prayed, I was a kid. So he sat there trying to remember. And he muttered a few phrases from an old prayer. And all of a sudden, the people around him, he was on this journey with other souls condemned to hell. And there's great hatred now. It is hatred. They began to get very angry at him. And they were saying stuff to him in obscene language, which is unimaginable. He says, nobody's ever spoken like this in this world. In essence, there is no God. Nobody can hear you. And if you don't stop, we're going to really hurt you. And because the mention of God, when he would utter that word, made them so angry. He tried even harder to remember the phrases about God, anything from his childhood. And he was aware it was driving them away from him as he began to say the word God. It repelled them. It was as though he was throwing boiling oil on them, he said. And eventually he was alone. Again, dark, void, boundaryless. And his senses, he says, he had a sense they were still there. They were way off in the darkness somewhere lurking. And he says, I was left alone for a time without measure. And I thought about my life. And the bottom line was that I had led a sinful life, a bad life. My God was my career. That's what I worshiped. And I thought of how cold-hearted and cruel and manipulative I was. And he says, I felt, you know what? This is where I belong. This is where I belong. He says, I knew the only way to survive in this place, if I was to survive, was to be crueler than the people who were around me. There was no kindness here. There was no compassion. There was no hope. I had no hope of seeing the world again or getting my life back. I was dead. And I was in the sewer pipe of the universe. He said, I was in a cesspool. He said, but something in his heart, maybe it was an act of desperation, he says. He says he just called out into the darkness because he was not in hell yet. He said, Jesus, please save me. Save me. And he says, as he said this prayer of desperation, of submission, as he said it with such contriteness, he said, off in the darkness, he saw a pinpoint of light. It was like the faintest star in the sky, he says. And I wondered, why didn't I see that before? It was always so black and dark here. The star was getting brighter and brighter. And at first, he thought it might be just a phenomenon. He didn't know what it was. And then it dawned on him. It was moving towards him at an enormous rate of speed. And he realized it was just indescribably brilliant. But it wasn't a light at all. It was a living entity. It was a luminous being. He says it was probably about 8 feet in diameter, oval in shape, and its brilliance and its intensity was so incredible, it just penetrated his body. In a very vivid, very beautiful experience, he slowly rose up with no effort whatsoever to the light. And what ended up here, because I only have a few minutes left to tell, maybe I'll share more of a story later, Howard Storm had a life review. He was able to see the failings of his life. The paths that he went down, the rejection of God, the things that he worshiped, and the beauty of the gift of his free will. And God, in his mercy, gave Howard a second chance, gave him an opportunity. Yeah, Howard actually wrote a book on this where he described his near-death experience. But when he came back, he had such a radical conversion. That he ended up dedicating his life to Christ and is a pastor today. That's the power of that particular experience. You know, hell exists. It is real. And I'll tell you what, there are consequences for our rejection of souls. St. Faustina, I shared with you many times her experiences. You know, she visited what she called the abyss of hell. Her angel brought her there. And like Howard, she says the devils were full of hatred towards her. She says, what would I write? And she wrote this all in her diary. It's I think it's diary entry 741. You can go back and read what she wrote. She goes, what I've written here is just a pale, pale shadow of the things I saw. And again, words are not strong enough. And they're not descriptive enough to articulate the realities that await us. And she said, the one thing I really noticed, that the souls there are those who disbelieve that there is a hell. I don't know where you are. And she talked about the different tortures. You go to hell, yes, we have the rejection of God. But she saw, I think she recorded in her diary, probably 7 tortures. And she says these are tortures suffered by the damned, but they're not the end of the sufferings. There's indescribable sufferings in hell, she says, that are destined for particular souls. And she says those are the torments of the senses, that each soul will undergo a terrible and indescribable suffering related to the manner which it sinned. Now, let me speak to you about that for just a second. Gentlemen, tonight, when you're ready to go online and look at that pornography, think about that. If you are ready to cheat or defraud somebody, you're gossiping, hurting somebody with your words, committing calumny or any other act, think about the sin. There are special tortures designed for souls, particular souls. Those are torments of the senses. Each soul will undergo terrible and indescribable sufferings related to the manner in which they sinned. Faustina, like the seers in Fatima who saw this fire of hell, she says she would have died if it had not been for her angel. The seers of Fatima said they would have died if it wasn't for the Virgin Mary. She says there are caverns, there are pits of torture where one form of agony differs from another. I would have died if it had not been for for the omnipotence of God and his support of me. She says, you know, no one can say there's not a hell. You know, let the sinner know that he will be tortured through all eternity. This is not me. This is St. Faustina saying this. Know that the sinner will be tortured throughout all eternity in those senses which he made use of to sin. She says, I'm only writing this at the command of God so that no soul may find an excuse by saying, there's no hell. I don't believe that. Or nobody's ever been there. Now, Faustina says, I write this so no soul can make that excuse that no one has ever been there, so no one can say what it's like. How terribly souls will suffer. And she concluded with this. She said, consequently, I pray even more fervently for the conversion of sinners. I plead incessantly for God's mercy upon them. Oh, my Jesus, I would rather be in agony until the end of the world amidst the greatest sufferings than offend you by the least sin. That should be our prayer. Heaven is one reality. I think one of those great extensions of God's mercy is purgatory. And of course, for those who love God, there awaits heaven, which is beyond human comprehension. There is a beauty there that's impossible to describe. In heaven, you're in a state of complete satisfaction. You are consumed with love that goes beyond anything you've ever felt. So I say to you, my brother, I say to you, my sister, live well. Choose God and choose virtue so that one day we may be with God for all eternity.